Good morning and welcome to the Acromegaly Update for Monday, June 1st. Today we have two new research papers on acromegaly to walk through, and then we'll shift to the broader rare disease industry for a look at what's been happening over the past week. Let's start with the science. Segment 1, Acromegaly Research. Both papers this week come from the journal Pituitary, published late last week. And they paint a sharper picture of the long-term damage acromegaly can do even in patients who appear well-controlled. The first study looks at the heart. Researchers in China enrolled 74 patients with acromegaly and put them through a specialized cardiac imaging test called speckle tracking echocardiography. This is a more sensitive technique than standard heart ultrasound. It can detect subtle dysfunction in how the heart muscle contracts before a patient has any symptoms at all. What they found was striking. The higher a patient's IGF-1 level, that's the main growth hormone mediator that drives acromegaly, the thicker the heart walls and the more disordered the timing of cardiac contractions. And here's the clinically important twist. Those harmful effects were substantially amplified in patients who also had elevated BMI or high triglyceride glucose index, a marker of insulin resistance. In other words, metabolic problems and hormone excess together do more damage than either would alone. Male patients fared worse than female patients across most cardiac measures, and patients who had achieved biochemical remission had meaningfully better heart structure and function than those with active disease. But the key message is that even remission may not tell the whole story. The metabolic environment needs to be addressed too. The authors argue that speckle tracking echocardiography should be part of standard acromegaly monitoring, given how much ordinary echo can miss. The second paper is a narrative review, a synthesis of existing evidence focused on bone fragility across pituitary adenomas, including acromegaly, with a specific look at whether men and women face different risks. The short answer is yes, and men tend to get the worse end of it. Men with pituitary disorders are often diagnosed later with larger, more aggressive tumors, meaning they've had longer exposure to hormone excess by the time treatment begins. They also tend to have more severe pituitary hormone deficiencies. All of that adds up to a higher fracture burden. What makes this review particularly practical is its critique of standard bone monitoring. Dual energy X-ray absorptiometry, the DEXA scan most clinicians rely on, measures bone density, but not bone quality. And in acromegaly, it's bone quality, the microscopic architecture, that often suffers most. The authors recommend that clinicians also perform vertebral morphometry to check for silent spinal fractures and calculate something called the trabecular bone score, which gives a better read on bone microstructure. Standard DEXA alone misses too much. The upshot from both papers, controlling the hormone is necessary, but not sufficient. Cardiometabolic status and skeletal architecture deserve active attention in every acromegaly patient, regardless of how well IGF-1 is suppressed. Now, zooming out from acromegaly to the wider rare disease industry, here's what's been moving this week. Segment 2, Rare Disease Industry News. The biggest rare disease clinical story this week came out of the American Society of Clinical Oncology meeting in Chicago, which kicked off at the end of May. AstraZeneca presented survival data for a drug called anselamimab being tested for a rare and often fatal condition called AL amyloidosis. In this disease, misfolded antibody proteins accumulate in the heart, kidneys, and other organs, causing progressive damage. Here's the backstory. AstraZeneca's phase 3 trial in AL amyloidosis missed its primary endpoint when the results came out last year. The drug didn't work better than placebo in the overall population. But the company had pre-specified a subgroup, patients with the kappa light chain form of the disease, which represents about 1 in 5 AL amyloidosis cases. At ASCO, AstraZeneca showed the data for that 72-patient subgroup. In that group, only about 31% of patients on anselamimab died, compared to 58% on placebo, a 62% reduction in mortality. Cardiovascular hospitalizations were also dramatically lower. AstraZeneca is now pursuing a regulatory strategy aimed at getting approval specifically for that kappa subgroup, arguing the data are clinically meaningful, even if the broad trial failed. This is an aggressive move, and it's uncertain. Regulators are generally skeptical of subgroup-only approvals, and the lack of benefit in the much larger Lambda subgroup will be hard to explain away. But it's a consequential test case for how the FDA handles this kind of situation in rare diseases, and one that developers across the sector will be watching closely. On a more encouraging note, though just outside our main look-back window from a couple of weeks ago, BioMarin Pharmaceutical reported positive phase 3 results for Voxzogo in a condition called hypochondroplasia. You may know Voxzogo as the drug that was first approved for achondroplasia, the most common form of dwarfism, back in 2021. Hypochondroplasia is a related bone growth disorder, typically milder and often diagnosed later in childhood. In this new trial, children who received Voxzogo grew faster and showed significant increases in both standing height and arm span after 1 year. BioMarin plans to file with the FDA for this new indication in the third quarter. Analysts project this could eventually be worth hundreds of millions of dollars in additional revenue, though it will require building the market. Hypochondroplasia is frequently underdiagnosed. And finally, there's a cautionary tale that's been unfolding. Aardvark Therapeutics, a smaller biotech working on a drug called ARD-101 for Prader-Willi syndrome, received a clinical hold from the FDA in mid-May after cardiovascular signals emerged in a high-dose healthy volunteer study. The phase 3 trial, which had already enrolled 87 patients, was stopped. The company now plans to unblind its data to help figure out if there's a path forward, but its shares fell more than 35%, and its cash runway runs out around mid-2027. The FDA's concern is specifically about heart safety at high doses, and it's unclear whether lower doses would preserve enough of the drug's efficacy to be worth continuing. Prader-Willi is a devastating genetic condition causing relentless hunger, and the only approved treatment addresses the problem through a different mechanism. Aardvark's situation is a reminder that even in rare diseases with high unmet need, early and thorough cardio safety work isn't optional. To close, this week's research underscores something that often gets overlooked in acromegaly management: the disease's reach extends well beyond IGF-1 numbers. Heart and bone damage accumulate in ways that routine monitoring can miss, and remission alone doesn't erase the metabolic legacy of years of hormone excess. In the broader field, the rare disease sector is in a period of genuine uncertainty, navigating FDA leadership changes, shifting evidence standards, and the tension between commercial pressure and patient safety. The coming months will test how much flexibility regulators are willing to extend and how much developers can ask for, as treatments for conditions with tiny patient populations and limited clinical options continue to advance. That's it for today's Acromegaly Update. We'll be back next week with the latest. Until then, take care.